Well, Easter's come early, huh? I told him as I listened to the band rehearsing that I got the wrong sermon for Easter. They were kicking it like we will in a couple weeks. But we are continuing in our series that you're well familiar with by this point. But as we've said through Lent, we're focusing on Jesus' teaching about the kingdom of God. And this is the dominant theme of his teaching, but also of his works. He didn't just teach about it, but he demonstrated the kingdom through his healings and through his interactions with people. That was all part of illustrating it. Last week, we looked at Matthew's parable chapter. And don't associate this if you're a financial person, but it's chapter 13. And the parable chapter of Matthew is where Jesus gives these word pictures, short illustrations of this kingdom. But he is really building on what any Jewish person would already know about the kingdom if they had paid attention, which they did, to the law and the prophets, what we call the Old Testament, their Torah, that was steeped in kingdom imagery and understanding. And so what Jesus was really doing was talking about the next steps in God's revelation. That's been one of the purposes of this whole series, is to try and give you those threads so that we don't just see these books as standing alone and not being connected. So last week in chapter 13, Jesus talked about little tiny mustard seeds. And his picture of that was just like a small seed does not look like much. Expect that when it's planted, it will have long-lasting results. Seeds produce, obviously, much more than what they look like initially. He used a picture of leaven. Who knows what leaven looks like? It is hidden in baked goods. And so he said, look at the positive work of the kingdom. It's like leaven in this broken world that we live in. That's what the kingdom is doing. It's bringing something good out of a broken place. He talked about treasure buried in the ground and a pearl, which would have been one of the most precious things of that time. He said, sell those. Don't hang on to that stuff. If you learn about the kingdom, there is nothing that is of value equal to what the kingdom will provide. And then finally, last week, we looked at his comparison of weeds and seeds growing together. Most of our gardens probably look like that right now. You may or may not have been out to weed yet. Those are growing together, and Jesus said, leave them. Let those grow together in his picture. He said, those things will be taken care of at the end of life. And what Jesus was saying is, your decision about the kingdom is the greatest decision you will make in your life. These are life and death issues. This isn't just choosing one worldview over another or one religious approach. This is the kingdom, and it has important consequences to every human being. And I closed last week by saying that part of the joy of following Jesus is to no longer look at what we are fed in terms of news as being the primary thing that we should be concerned about, but we become detectives for God's kingdom. We're embedded reporters on the front lines of stuff that doesn't get in the paper. And so I reported on Pastor Ivan Montenegro, who is a Hispanic pastor in our community that has planted 11 Hispanic churches in Whatcom County. Probably a lot of us don't even know that those exist. Or we've driven by a building where there was a Spanish sign and we said, well, that's cool, but didn't think much about who's perhaps behind it. I mentioned the Engedi House, this home for women who are being rescued and transformed from a life in human trafficking, and their fundraiser 3 weeks ago, where over $200,000 was contributed to this tiny ministry out in the county that's quiet, but doing deep work. And I have another one to report to you as a reporter on the front lines. A week ago, Saturday night, was the Interfaith Coalition auction. And I was so pleased to get a report. Over $200,000 was contributed to that organization through their fundraiser just 2 weeks ago. Not front page news, but it's kingdom seeds and leaven, and it's stuff that we are blessed with in this county, folks. I was just talking to Nathan Dwyer, who kind of connects with Interfaith from our behalf. Remember, we contributed a basket of certificates to dinners and that kind of thing. And we were both remarking what a joy it is to be in a place where these things are just part of the fabric of God's kingdom in Whatcom County. Someone was led to start them up at some point, but we are the recipients of the ability to contribute and build and work with them as they fit a part of the bigger tapestry of what God's doing in our county. Well, today we're just going to look briefly at the Gospel of Mark and one particular section in the middle of Mark, and it's chapters 8 through 10 is what I want to look at, and we're just going to take a high view of it. But Mark's message, as you know, it's the shortest of the Gospels, but Mark has a very specific purpose in mind, and he is wanting to communicate in a very concise manner the way of the cross. This instrument that we see of death that is in Christian churches, it's on our buildings, I've mentioned this many, many times. This odd symbol, especially during Lent, that we see everywhere among churches that proclaim the gospel. Well, Mark gives us a definition of the meaning of this cross and why Christians have done this over the centuries that Jesus has ascended back to heaven. And Jesus shared three things consistently in his message about how people even come to understand what the kingdom's all about. He said there's three things. The first is a soft heart. The second is you have the ability to hear. And the third is you have the ability to see. Soft heart, hearing, and seeing. And often at the conclusion of one of Jesus' teachings, he would say what? He who has ears to hear, let him hear. He realized it was a work of the Holy Spirit. No human being just sits and listens to the Bible apart from the work of the Spirit and just says, oh, well, that sounds compelling. I think I'll look more into this. We know that we're dealing with spiritual things where God is at work before we even pay attention. We sang about that. It is relentless pursuit of God towards us that even begins the conversation. And so our soft heart, our ability to desire to be able to hear what God is saying, and then our desire to see the work of the kingdom are all critical to growing in this understanding. Well, Mark lists a feeding of 4,000. There is some discussion among scholars whether these were two separate events, the 5,000 or the 4,000. But needless to say, for Mark's purposes, he puts the feeding of this 4,000 right in the middle of Mark in these chapters 8 through 10. And after this miracle that we're very familiar with along the Sea of Galilee, where all these men and women and children are fed from a very small basket of fish and bread, the disciples didn't get it. They had full bellies, but spiritually their hearts were hard. They didn't see, they didn't hear. And so in Mark 8, verse 17 and 18, they get in a boat and they're going back across to the other side of the lake. And Jesus was warning them about the leaven of the Pharisees. Now he's using leaven in a negative way. He's saying, beware, because the negative work of the Pharisees or Satan himself is what's causing mayhem all through this planet and individual lives. And so the disciples thought he was referring to the bread. They might have been going back to one of his parables. And so in 8:17, It says, Mark records this, aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? I think we have this scripture. Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? There's all three of the markers that Jesus is looking for. Don't you remember? And so Jesus is trying to slow down a little bit and say, okay, remedial teaching here. Take a step back. Any good teacher would do that. And so Jesus is both, as I said earlier, he is both explaining the kingdom through his teaching, but he's demonstrating it. And so he did both with the 4,000 along the seashore. And in fact, remember last week when I talked about Matthew being an editor? In fact, all of the gospel writers are editors. They're putting the accounts of Jesus together for a purpose, for their particular audience. And in Mark's case, he brackets this account with two other stories. One is in Mark 7:33, where Jesus heals a man who is deaf and barely able to speak. And on the backside of this, in 8:23, Jesus heals a blind man. So he's making a point. The deaf receive their hearing, and the blind receive their sight. And he's bracketing this in the middle. He's a good editor. And then in chapter 8, or further in chapter 8, Jesus now introduces the cross as a focal point for his followers. And this is the first mention of his death in the book of Mark. He then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about this. Even the teenager, perhaps Mark, understood it. But Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him. This very plain description that Jesus gives. But then, in verse 33, Jesus turned and looked at his disciples. He had to rebuke Peter. Get behind me, Satan, he said. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Teachable moment. A low point in Peter's life before the cross, but a moment that I'm sure helped him to unstop his ears and open his eyes and soften his heart to what was really going on. The second mention of Jesus regarding his death is in Mark chapter 9. They left that place and passed through Galilee. They're still up north. Jesus did not want anyone to know where they were because he was teaching his disciples. As Jesus got closer and closer to the cross, he got smaller and smaller in terms of the audience that he had, and it was primarily investing in his closest disciples. I think we have another part there to this one. There we go. Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They'll kill him, and after 3 days, he'll rise." Now, how odd would that have sounded to their ears? To us, it's like, well, yeah, duh, we know the story. But to these guys, they're on the front end of this, and Jesus is laying out the whole landscape. This had to be puzzling. And so, what Mark records shouldn't shock us. They didn't understand what he meant, and they were afraid to ask him about it. Didn't Peter just get in trouble? I ain't saying nothing. Typical high school class. And so Mark is honest, and he's talking to us about the difficulty that the disciples even had. We cannot grasp what the cross and the resurrection means in one simple sermon, in one simple reading. The work of the kingdom begins as seeds, and then it goes deeper and deeper into our lives as Jesus reveals more and more to us. Well, the third mention of his death is in Mark chapter 10. And here they were on their way to Jerusalem. This is after Jesus had declared that he was now going to make the journey from the north to the south, which was really a suicide walk, because everybody, including Jesus and the disciples, knew that to go to Jerusalem was to put himself in danger of following through with exactly what he had predicted. So on their way, with Jesus leading the way, and the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Mark's honest again. There was tremendous fear at this journey as they were walking these days' journey down to Jerusalem. And he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him. And here he says it again. We're going up to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests, teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him, spit on him, flog and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise. My goodness. Disciples are trying to figure this out. What in the world has happened to Jesus? He's now on suicide watch. This man is crazy. What in the world does all that he's taught us mean if he's just hell-bent on having his life end? 3 days later, he will rise. He left something for them to ponder. Well, now we're going to skip down to the healing of the blind man, down in verse 46. They came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, that is, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. This is the only account in the Gospels where Bartimaeus is actually mentioned. He's referred to as a blind man, but Mark decides to give us his name. This is a sketch drawing from Rembrandt. And if you haven't looked online, Rembrandt did a tremendous amount of wonderful drawings of gospel accounts. And this is Rembrandt's view. But in this account, what Mark is saying is there is a contrast between the true spiritual faith of a blind man and the disciples who can actually see, but they're spiritually blind. And so again, the contrast is very obvious, what Mark is attempting to do. And Jesus is making the point with a blind man, but he's speaking about spiritual sight. And so, verse 47, if you'd put that up. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." But many rebuked Bartimaeus, told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Bartimaeus had eyes to see. He knew the term Son of David from his Old Testament understanding. This was the term, one of the terms for this coming Messiah. It's why Matthew, in his entire first chapter of his gospel, gives the lineage of Jesus to tie it back to David's line. And so here again, the physically blind can have clearer spiritual insight than those of us with 20/20 vision. The second half, go ahead, and this is another depiction. I love this. Jesus reaching out to touch the blind man. But in the second half of this prayer, we're reminded that our belief is only the beginning of our understanding spiritually. Because Bartimaeus cries out, "Have mercy on me, a sinner." He knows who Jesus is because of the prophecies in the law and the prophets. But he also realizes who he is in relationship to this Son of David. "Have mercy on me, a sinner." Verse 49, Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." They called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." And throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. Now that's not a trick question. That's not being mean-spirited on Jesus' part. This is another part of his invitation to bring Bartimaeus into an understanding of the kingdom. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." The faith of this man was in a soft heart, with ears that were ready to hear, and with eyes that were ready to see. And he simply received that gift from Jesus. He got to see the kingdom in action. Immediately, he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. And so this is the pattern that we find for the way of the cross. Mark, again, in very short staccato style, gives us that message through his gospel, and particularly in these three chapters. But I wanted to close with this quote from Frederick Buechner. I've been commending the devotional that we gave out at the beginning of Lent to you, and also just him as an author. If you haven't read Buechner, you really need to. But this quote was in the devotional this past week, and it just totally fit with what the sermon's about today. Buechner writes, "His cross is the truth about what the darkness is in us and in our world. And his cross is the truth about what the love of God is in us and in our world." This statement to me summarizes the symbols that we've been talking to you about all through Lent. Why do we focus on the elements of the Passion as symbols? It's exactly because of what Buechner says. On one side of the cross, we see the brokenness of this world and our own sin and brokenness. But when we flip the cross around and we see it on the other side, what jumps out is the truth about what the love of God is. That's what's on this side. Well, how in the world can both of those things be in one symbol? As Western thinkers, we have trouble with that. But in spiritual realms, those things go perfectly together. And so the cross is given to us both to understand the brokenness and darkness of this world, but it is a symbol of hope. Because on the flip side, it is the symbol of the love of God. And love triumphs over his judgment. I'm going to invite the band to come forward at this time as we're going to close our service today in worship.